The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesar Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesar Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Hello.
Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. The only NFL podcast. One of the hosts thinks Puka Nacua is what happens when he eats chocolate. That's Lenny. He went to the emergency room a couple months ago, I think. Ate an entire bar of dark chocolate. Not his finest hour. I'm Mina Kimes. And I am so happy to not only be joined by the wonderful Greg Rosenthal, but also to be talking about football on a recording in this medium. It's been, I think I should have looked up, Greg, when I left, because I was thinking about like the state of the NFL when I stopped recording and then the state of the NFL now and the things that have dramatically changed, and not that many crazy things have happened. I think it was about week 4 or 5, maybe, if I remember correctly. Yeah, it was September 26th. I guess, like, what would you say is the biggest and most dramatic change since, like, week 4?
Well, we got you back. We haven't had you. I mean, it's great. For all the Mina Kimes and Lenny Show listeners out there, it is great to have you back. What is the biggest change? I think the 49ers, you know, on a 3-game skid feels biggest. I was thinking about that just in general this season. If you looked at the standings right now, we're halfway through basically. It's almost surprising how few surprises there are. It's pretty chalk. It's if you saw these standings before the season even started, you would look at them and be like, yeah, that all makes sense. Oh, the Texans are 4-4. That's like the most surprising thing that a team that's, you know, won 3 games last year has 1-4. But other than that, it's pretty chalk.
Yeah, CJ Stroud is the thing that I came up with. Not that he is good, but that he just looks so good. We're going to talk about the Texans today. And then the Niners was actually the other thing. And we're going to talk about that in detail because I think they're really interesting. And that's definitely one of the more interesting games of the week. What you said about being chalk is funny because one of our great listeners, Sam Hoppin, tweeted a midseason update for the Mina Kimes Michael Jr. draft pick or the team draft contest. And when I look at the order of the teams that we took, it is real. Like at first I was like, damn, good job us. And then I was like, no, these were all like pretty obvious. Like there's no, I think like maybe the Texans and are a little bit better than, or sorry, are definitely better than we expected. But for the most part, like when you look at the teams and their order, like you said, it's not that surprising. I think it's just kind of a matter of momentum, injuries, like the Bills defense, obviously. I think at the time actually we're recording, Joe Burrow looked like, you know, a Weekend at Bernie's out there. Now he looks awesome again. But that's just like a health thing, you know, both those things are health things. So I don't think either of them are like fall under the category of like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. I think Stroud, the Niners. Yeah, that's kind of it for me. I mean, I think I posted this, like the AFC North is the best division of football, but we kind of all had them as awesome. So that's not surprising either.
Right. We thought maybe the AFC East would be right there before Rodgers' injury and before the Patriots turned into the Dick McPherson Patriots. But how the teams got there is interesting. But I feel like I've been through enough seasons by now that, yes, how the Bills have got here is concerning. And they're not getting some of their injured players back. So that might be a real problem. But they're 5-4, and there's just so much left to go that none of the teams that we thought had a great chance to win the Super Bowl before the season are in bad position at all. So how the Bengals got here was interesting. Like how the Jaguars are winning, we'll get to that, is surprising. And how the Chiefs are winning is surprising. But in the end, like all the teams we thought are in great position. But I'm ready. I'm ready for the Mina Kimes take explosion here for all the things you've been cooking up the last month and a half.
Well, let's start with Niners Jags because I think this is like this game is a rich text because as you alluded to, the Jaguars have been winning, but in kind of a weird way. And then the Niners have been losing also in a weird, not all of it's weird. Some of it's predictable, but some of it's very confusing. And I think kind of needs to be worked through. Let me start here. This is, I think, genuinely shocking. If I told you week 1 or week 4 or whatever, looking ahead to this particular game, that one of these defenses would be 11th versus the pass, 25th versus the run in DVOA, and then the other defense would be 5th versus the pass, 4th versus the run You would be pretty shocked to hear, I think, that, you know, the better defense was Jacksonville.
Right. And I've seen some of these numbers and I'm like, well, if they played an easy schedule, it's like, no, not really.
Nah.
They're just really consistent. They're getting surprising play. And I'm shocked because it's one of the things I was the most wrong about in the offseason was I didn't really trust the Jaguars taking a next step just because on paper they were the same defense as they were a year ago. Yes. And they were a bottom five defense a year ago.
I think that I've thought through kind of why, and I think there's like a number of reasons. By the way, Greg, and then if you had later on to that, and by the way, Trevon Walker is still not going to be really getting off after the quarterback. Like, it would not make any sense. But here are some of my theories. So, like, one is I think that some of the players just are playing better on that side of the ball. Not Trevon Walker, at least certainly not rushing the passer, at least. But Devin Lloyd at linebacker. I think their linebacker mm-hmm. unit looks really good every week. I think their safety group has looked quite good. And then up front, this is just like a very stout run defense. I would say last year, I talked about this a bit, they were bad, but they were like the pressure rate suggested that they were better than they looked and that they weren't getting sacks and that the sacks would eventually come. Well, they're still 30th in sack rate, so that makes it confusing. But they're just kind of technically sound. Like, they don't like bust coverage a lot. They're really like stout against the run. They play a ton of base personnel. Those linebackers are good. I remember like feeling like, God, they have too many linebackers on this team. And they've invested so much in it, but they all play a lot and they're all really good. They play the eighth most base defense in the NFL, and when they do, they're second in EPA per play, and that's of course notable against a San Francisco 49ers team that teams tend to counter with base.
Right, and there is something to a team that spent so much last year in free agency and invested in the draft and everything, having continuity, and that the players are better in the same system. It's a point for not changing things. Darius Williams in cornerback play just going up and down, because Darius Williams was kind of a hot mess last year as a big free agent pickup, and he was inside, he was outside, and now he's playing great. He's making big plays. Foye Oluokun was really good for them last year, but I feel like he's even better. Josh Allen has been really good for them throughout his career, but he's even better now. He's outskirts of Defensive Player of the Year candidacy. And you think about how strong they've been against the run, and I was like, who do they remind me of a little? And it's the 49ers. It's the Trent Baalke revenge game here because they're not as dynamic, but they just have huge guys. And that's if there's a Baalke ball, in recipe, that's it. So it's Fatu Kasi and Davon Hamilton's back and Roy Robertson Harris and Trevon Walker and Josh Allen are good against the run. And it's just like, we've got huge bodies. We've got pretty dynamic linebackers behind them who can make plays. Now we have some safeties like Cisco, and we're getting better play in the secondary. And I do think this week against CMC and this 49ers team who just hasn't been able to run for a month, that's potentially a real advantage. To me, that's really where it starts. For all the talk about Brock Purdy, I feel like that's the most surprising thing, that for a month Christian McCaffrey is averaging 3.4 yards per carry and under 50 yards rushing per game.
Yeah, from weeks 1 through 5, they were 0.07 expected points added per play in running. Over the last, weeks 6 through 8, that has fallen into negative territory. And I would say that matters an outsized amount for this particular football team because they're so – schedule matters so much for them. And, this is kind of always been the case. I guess I would have to look back at every Shanahan quarterback in San Francisco. But first down, when everything's on the table, it's amazing. They're fifth, or Brock Purdy is sixth in QBR. They average 11 yards per attempt on first down. The average NFL average is 7.6. On third down, when the NFL average is 7.2, they're about in line with that. Brock Purdy. No.
Here come the takes.
How do I want to phrase this? I actually don't think he's played that bad over the last few weeks. He's just has been punished by turnover luck. And that's reflected, by the way, if you look at the underlying pass numbers, they're still good. like in success rate and yards per play. They're bad at EPA because he turns the ball over. However, he is a different quarterback on third down. He is 32nd in on-target rate. He is 32nd in completion percentage over expected. And he's very high on first down. So to go back to your point, I got all these numbers, Greg. I'm just sitting on these numbers. Nowhere to say them. But your point is, I think, really important. If they don't run the ball well, it changes the complexion of their offense. It changes what's on the table. It puts them into disadvantageous down and distances. And then I would say also, and this is, I think, more important than the offense, when they aren't playing with the lead and they can't run the ball and they're forced to pass more, it is a very different football team. Miami suffers from this to some extent. And I think the really shocking thing is not everything I just said about the offense, frankly, I could have told you last year. The defense is what's shocked me during this phase. Do you feel the same way, like watching this team over the last few weeks?
Yeah, that it's fallen off that hard in terms of like their principles. And, you know, Richard Sherman talked about some of the game planning. They're moving Steve Wilks down to the sideline, they announced today.
Oh man.
Like they're making that lever pull. And yeah, that they've been a genuinely bad group for a month is a little hard to wrap your mind around. And I think what you said about playing with the lead is really interesting too, because the Jaguars have just gotten so used to playing with the lead, and we can get into what's gone wrong for them offensively. But that's part of it, is they've had the luxury of playing with the lead. And so that's such a big thing in this game. Defensively, I've been waiting for their offseason plan, San Francisco, in terms of their cornerback position, to catch up to them at some point. I was like, they can't keep getting away with this. At some point, like, isn't this going to be a problem? I don't know necessarily that this is the game that it will be a problem. This feels more like a low scoring game. And it feels like these things are correctable in a long season, because I believe they just have too much personnel not to. But maybe it's to your point that they've been playing from behind a little more.
The defense stuff is confusing because it's mostly the same players, except for, mostly the same players. I mean, Ward's gone, but I mean, the safeties look fine to me.
They're healthier on the defensive line, if anything.
Yeah. And
with Hargrave, who's been good.
With Javon Hargrave. And the scheme doesn't look that different to me. I mean, you know, obviously there was the poorly timed Steve Wilks splits, which he has been hung out to dry they have talked about that a lot. And I thought D'Amico Ryans was always really good at timing his blitzes, so I'm sure that's whatever factors into it. But it's not like they've changed their identity that much. I think just watching them, like a few things that jump out, the most stunning thing is the missed tackles, especially like from the linebackers. It's like crazy, right? Like the 49ers formula over the last few years has been an outrageous four-man rush, and then because they're so good at run defense and tackling, anything you can do to counter the pass rush is they'll just end you. Like you throw a screen and like five guys converge on it and blow it up. So it's very weird to watch like screens succeed. I mean, the Vikings game comes to mind where that I was just like, what am I watching right now? This makes no sense. Like, so there's that. I think in coverage, Oliver's not worked out for them. You talked about the cornerback issues. And there's times where there's just not enough time for the rush to get home. And then the other thing, and this is probably, I think, the run defense just looks bad. I mean, especially up front, it's a little bit confusing. Like, they just seem very porous. I think some of that, though, that's where I think scheme comes into play. I was thinking about this watching the Bengals game. Offenses have figured out ways, and this is something we saw last year, the Chiefs game comes to mind, to use the Niners defense's aggression against them with little tosses and, you know, different kinds of power runs. And I have noticed like a lot of runs, oh my God, there's Nick Bosa in the backfield, or they've shot past them. And so that to me does feel a little bit like coaching. And that's where I think maybe Wilks does deserve some blame.
Right. And this is a tough matchup for that. The Jags are a good screen team. They can get rid of the ball quickly. That's really what they do best offensively. And Etienne is one of those guys, we'll talk about another Joe Mixon later, that if you're just watching every week, you're like, he is better. I just think he is better.
Amazing.
This, he's a better player. And I know it doesn't totally show up in the yards per carry. And obviously he's like leading the league in touches per game. So they're using him as a workhorse, which I never expected, but they're staying on schedule, and he's just making the holes that he gets count. And they're good at scheming up ways to make the defense over pursue. And so I think that has been a problem. Some of it is just bad luck. I think the 49ers have been a team that's been getting a lot of pressure this year, but they're not quite finishing plays. Nick Bosa is emblematic of that his sack total isn't as big. And we know pressure is production and hits are production. But they just aren't quite finishing the plays, even though all these guys are getting a lot of pressure. And maybe that's why they took a chance on Chase Young. I figure why not for a comp pick the way he's playing. I mean, that's a steal. And they said he's going to play. Kyle Shanahan said Wednesday that he expects them to have a major role. And I'm really interested to see that against this Jaguars offensive line. Because with the Jaguars, I can't quite tell if they've just been trying to overcompensate for their offensive line by getting rid of the ball so quickly and playing very conservatively, or if it's just like a bad offensive line. And they've actually got their five starters, I think, that they had in mind heading into the year playing, I believe, for the first time all season this week. Walker Little is going to be at left guard. And I think that's the first time they've actually all been together. But on paper, this is a mismatch, and the 49ers should get a ton of pressure on them.
Yeah, so Trevor Lawrence gets rid of the ball like crazy fast, right? Anything over 2.5 seconds, which is still like, you know, that's a lot. Anything like outside of rhythm is what Next Gen Stats calls it. He's pressured 52.5% of the time. It's not good.
Wow.
It's really bad. I think that's, you kind of captured to me like the, on that side of the ball, the Niners pass rush versus the Jags offensive line, huge mismatch. However, I think ETN and Christian Kirk in the slot, that's a mismatch that I actually feel favors Jacksonville with the quick passes and the slot work. So I think it really just comes down to, whether or not that ball can come out in time, whether they can do the things to the Niners defense other teams have done successfully, despite the mismatch in the trenches. It's going to be, I think, just can this four-man rush really overwhelm them with Chase Young is going to sort of determine that. And as far as like the offense, I really do feel like it's like, does Jacksonville pull ahead? You know, I mean, I don't think it's that simple, but like, and I think Debo's back for this game. I don't believe Trent Williams is going to be back. That it's still, you know, Wednesday. So, but I
think
Debo
he has a chance. They said he would normally skip Wednesday anyways, and it was somewhat optimistic. And Zay Jones, and it sounds silly, but I think they've missed Zay Jones, and he might be coming back for this game. Because the whole Calvin Ridley thing has been weird. It's like, he's very game plan specific, and Kirk and Engram are almost a little more effective. I do want to throw one hot take by you because I'm trying to like figure out this Jaguars team. They've been very weird. It's like Trevor Lawrence, actually, when I'm thinking about their offense, you know what their offense reminds me of? Is another old Doug Peterson offense, the Alex Smith Chiefs offense. Like before that last year where Alex Smith was bombing it down the field. And like, it all makes sense. It's very efficient. It's not explosive, but there is something disarming. I'm not saying Trevor Lawrence is playing poorly this year. He's playing well. There is something disarming about watching him with so much talent. And it's just this like super condensed dink and dunk sort of hold on to a lead offense. Like it does not totally compute with what I expected.
Wait till we get to the Chargers, because I do not understand that team right now. And also I'm trying to understand the numbers and they're just befuddling. The Ridley stuff is really confusing. And I agree with you about Zay Jones. I do think getting Trent back and Debo is massive. I actually view them kind of in conjunction with each other, because, you know, if you don't have Trent Williams, the ball has to come out faster, which is when Debo Samuel does his magic, right? The yards after the catch, he's a monster. If you're missing both of them, you don't have that, right? So they kind of like help, they complement, they're like, it's kind of weird to think of an offensive lineman and a receiver as like being related, like a string, but there is like a little bit of a string that pulls them together. So I think getting them both back will be massive for alleviating some of the pressure on Purdy, who, he's been fine.
He's been the exact same.
I mean,
he's been the exact same, and the turnover luck just got worse. Actually, in all these games, and I'm not a pro or anti Purdy. I actually think his baseline, I've already believe that he'll be better than Jimmy G, that he is. The baseline's probably better. Like, his high-level stuff is definitely better. But he's been the same guy. And, oh, by the way, yeah, it hurts when you lose two All-Pros who are, you know, two of the highest-paid players in the league at their position. Like, in all these games, he's played well for 2 to 3 quarters, and then it's sort of fallen apart at the end when he needs to catch up.
I think the baseline is higher because of his scrambling. That's just been my takeaway from the last few weeks. I'm like, oh, damn, that was a good scramble.
And a few more special throws where I almost felt like Tony Romo watching him was the game he announced was like, that was me. Because he was, you know, he was like, he thinks Purdy's magic sauce is he can see things like a hair faster than people. And
that's not
and
true. Trusts the system.
And I don't know. Romo thought that was about himself too.
I lean Niners, especially if both Trent and Debo are back. But this is a weird one for all the reasons, all the weird matchup stuff. I just think that the Niners defensive line against the Jags offensive line, this could be one of those games where they especially with Chase Young, they take over. Chase Young, who was, you know, very good the first half of the season. So
it's a real, like, is 2023 different type of game. If Jaguars win this game, I need to give them like a little more credit than we have been, or be a little more worried about the 49ers. But I lean a little 49ers, barely. It's a little disrespectful. They're favored on the road, though.
Browns Ravens. This is a delightful defensive matchup. You have the best defenses, I think, by pretty much most metrics, the top two defenses in the NFL right now. But defenses that are really different, which is just such a exciting study in contrast, right? Like, the Browns defense plays a lot of man coverage. They're super aggressive. They've got this like crazy, they have one of the, maybe the best pass rusher in football. And then the Ravens defense is all trickery. It's like film nerd. What's the word I'm looking for? It's becoming kind of like a cliche, like a stereotype of itself, that all the film nerds just go crazy because, you know,
I mean,
it's
you
like
love yourself some Mike McDonald. You know, you were pretty early on it, even midway through last year, how much you loved yourself some Mike McDonald.
And I don't like it when people overemphasize scheme over players too much. And I do think sometimes the Ravens defense get. And I think I want to make something very clear, which is I think that what we were seeing from the Ravens defense, and I have talked about this for a while, is like the perfect marriage of players and scheme. I think a great example is a player like Jadeveon Clowney, who's, you know, bounced around the league, undervalued, didn't get signed, but, you know, we know is like this incredibly athletic guy who's so good against the run, he can cover, and then dropping him into this defense, it's like unfair. It's just perfect for him. Roquan Smith, linebacker, who can go sideline and sideline, can blitz, can drop into coverage and play the post. Again, perfect marriage for this defense. So the players are what make it sing, but the scheme is sick. It's so sick every week.
Right. And I wonder if what they do well in terms of making quarterbacks hold the ball a beat longer, scrambling them up a little mentally, our guy Gino last week, for instance. You know, I do wonder, like, how does that look against Deshaun Watson and this Browns team who have injuries up front at the wrong time. I don't know if this is like a galaxy brain talk, but last week it was like, you know, Watson's very much seemed to almost strip it down. I was talking to someone that it's almost like the Baker Mayfield Browns offense, which maybe you give credit to Stefanski for that. It's like one read, and if not, like, go make a play. And some deep balls that looked pretty good from Watson. It's like, maybe that's the best way to attack this Ravens defense anyways, because it's going to be tough to outthink them and get to your second and third read in the first place.
Yeah, so before we get into this game, I will say, you know, last week, definitely the best Watson has looked. I thought his arm looked good. You know, I texted a little bit about, like, his arm strength looked good on the deep balls. I think Amari Cooper's so good. Njoku's good, too. He looked decent moving, but it was a very, like you said, it's pretty simple. And this offense too has just not been able to run the ball well since the Nick Chubb injury. I don't see this going well against. Mm. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, you know, like you said, maybe that's the simplified. Like, maybe Amari Cooper just cooks and gets open, and there's some explosive plays, and Watson can scramble. I don't know, but like, I see the Browns offense versus the Baltimore defense as a pretty significant mismatch. So they played, it was DTR the last time they played. So you kind of have to.
We don't speak about that game. Sorry. DTR. We had some overzealous DTR preseason texts between us that will never be mentioned again.
Oh, man. It was pretty bad. They beat the Browns 28-3 in case people forgot. And Lamar, it was like a fine game. It was quiet. Like, you know, it was very much like a we're playing DTR, let's just not screw this up kind of game. He was pressured a lot. I mean, again, that's the Browns defense is sick. And I went back and looked at sort of their approach, and it was, you know, a lot of sort of just very, it was a very conservative offense. I'll be curious to see. I feels like every week the Ravens offense looks a little bit more cohesive. And yes, like Lamar, I will say this, man, about the Seahawks game. He looked so calm executing the offense. I mean, Lamar is always a player who's, because of his movement ability, like there's like a poise in the pocket under pressure that is just in like these little movements as he evades sacks that are very special. But in terms of like executing the dropback game, I don't know if I've ever seen him look so unruffled and so like just totally in control of the passing attack as he has lately.
No, it's awesome. It's what any Lamar fan, I consider myself one, has wanted to see. And I think a lot of it's the scheme. You know, some of it reminds you a little bit of, you know, what he did at Louisville and everything. But a lot of it is, I think, just him actually getting older too. Like I almost push back at the people that's like, he's always been a good passer. It's like, yes, I know. He's always been good in the pocket. Yes, I know. But like, you do get better and you do learn things as a pro. And I do think he's maturing at the point where his physical ability is still great, and they've been getting a little more out of OBJ. Last week I thought was his mm-hmm. best game yet. Like, you don't need a ton, but if you're getting contributions from Bateman and Flowers and OBJ especially, like, it makes a big deal. I'm totally with you that he's looked comfortable, but he and they're a different offense even than they were in week four, but this is a different sort of challenge. And if this game is 14-13 or 13-10, like, that is not going to shock me either. One of the reasons they finally broke through against the Browns in that first game, and it was in the second quarter, but they really only had two like good drives that game. Mm-hmm. And it was because they got the ball back like eight times in the first half. Mm-hmm. Their defense just kept getting it back. The Browns defense also did a great job in that game. And it'll be a good test of this Ravens offensive line. And I think that's the difference, is like, oh, their offensive God. Line is improving, and maybe the Browns offensive line is not as good as it has been in previous years. And now isn't as healthy either.
Yeah. The Browns offensive line. So, you know, Wills, I know he had like some rough patches in the season, but still losing him, you're down to now, like, I know DeJuan Jones has been good, but like, you're really down to your backups outside against this team. And the thing about like the Ravens offense, like you talked a little bit about how it affects quarterbacks, right? In terms of making them think a tick longer. Oh God, when do they play the Bengals? I can't wait. Oh, we're gonna talk about the Bengals later and how well Joe Burrow is playing. I can't wait for that meetup.
There's Thursday Night Football next week.
That's next week. Oh my God. Al, you just gotta get through Bears Panthers to make it
Us on the Around the NFL podcast with special guest Mina Kimes. We saved the best game of the season for you, Mina. Bears Panthers.
I actually like a gross Thursday night game because we can just kind of cut it up. And I can't wait to see how Al Michaels handles that one. It's going to be amazing. Tyson Bateman. Okay, but so back to the defense. So they do make quarterbacks tick longer, but with all the simulated pressures and creepers that they use, and we're doing a segment on sim pressures on NFL Live. I think by the time this podcast is out, so tune in Thursday. I'm popping on. I can't stay away. Maybe it's worth defining the difference. So simulated pressures and creepers, both the same result where you're sending four, and so you have more bodies and coverage. The difference is with simulated pressures, you're giving the appearance of blitzing. Creepers, you're doing a change pressure. So one of the guys on the line of scrimmage is switching places with one of the other guys behind him. So the Ravens do this like a zillion times a game. We started tracking them at ESPN. Brian Burke did And I'm going to use some of those stats tomorrow on the show, but they use it the most in the NFL. Shocker, right? So part of the problem that creates for quarterbacks is confusion, as Greg alluded to. But then the other thing it does is it confuses the offensive line because you don't know who you're supposed to block. And you often watch and it'll be humorous. A center will just be like, oh, sorry. It's actually really good. The Cowboys have been doing this a lot. It's a good way to get one-on-ones too if you have a super stud edge rusher. They have run some pretty nasty ones with Micah Parsons over the last few weeks in putting him in the middle. So anyways, that's a real problem against an offensive line that now has two backups at tackle. And I just feel like the combination of that confusion and the pressure, it's going to be pretty gross. On the other side, it's just like we have Myles Garrett. Your offensive line is good, but we have Myles Garrett and, you know, the rest of the Browns defensive front has been really good. So I think that, yeah, for me, like, that's obviously kind of the side of the ball I'm the most intrigued by. And I want to see if, like, the Ravens, you know, they have such an expansive menu with their offense right now. Like, they do so many different things. I'm curious to see if they can be a little bit more efficient than they were the first time these teams met.
Yeah, and sort of how they'll approach it, because I think the biggest improvements have maybe been in the running game. Like, you even saw in that Arizona game, you know, at halftime, they sort of realized, like, oh, they're just begging us to run. Like, they're trying to actually, they're kind of playing the pass, and we can do that. And Linderbaum, I'm not an O-line tape head, but, like, he does enough that I'm like, wow, that is impressive. I think the idea that they had with Tyler Linderbaum.
He killed us, dude. It's all happening.
Right.
He killed us.
Like, I don't need to know that much to be like, okay, this was the vision. This is actually what they talked about on draft night. It's pretty sweet.
It was so bad. There are Tyler Linderbaum highlights from that game. It's so gross.
Keaton Mitchell is a real thing, I think, too. Like, dude. I think Gus Edwards is a really good back that, you know, a little underrated as, like, he's a fine lead back for what they want to do. But even before Keaton Mitchell broke open a couple at the end, I was just like, wow, every time he has the ball, he is making a missed tackle, and the juice is just obvious. Even if it's just 15 touches or like 8 touches a game, like, he is another explosive element, and they could kind of use it because they're not that explosive in terms of their passing game, and he could be explosive. So I'm curious if that's going to have some staying power.
That's a great point, especially if you kind of, you know, then Lamar doesn't have to run as much. But Meaning Kime Show featuring Lenny, listeners will remember that we talked about Keaton Mitchell ahead of the combine. It wasn't my call. It was one of the players that Mike Renner said, you should watch this guy. And I watched him. He was like Eastern Carolina. And I was like, holy crap, he is fast. But the question was, would this translate? And I think what struck me watching him as he sliced through my Seahawks defense like hot butter or butter with a hot knife was the vision he was running with. Like, yes, he's really, 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 really fast, but he sees the field really, really well. And yeah, he's really good. If it's not obvious, I have maybe been like obsessed with the Ravens this year. I've been watching a little bit too much Ravens, and I'm probably, if there's a take explosion for me, it's probably that I'm watching too much Ravens and too excited about them. So, you know, still a good game. The Browns defense makes every game interesting, and maybe I'm underestimating the Browns offense after the improvement last week, but this feels like a team with a very good defense against the most balanced team in the NFL. So that's where
I don't know why. Yeah, I'm with you. I've been banging the drum that the Ravens can win the Super Bowl for a while, and now it seems more than obvious. But in, you know, the efficiency metrics, but it is a division game in which the first game was like a blowout. And it includes the top two defenses in the league. So I have a feeling it'll just be uglier than you think. And, like, I think they're giving 6 points. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if this is a last possession type of game, just because these teams, they do know each other. And I think the Browns have enough. And maybe I'm not optimistic about Watson, but there was something there last week in terms of his deep ball that it's just like, okay, maybe there's something.
No question. We shall see. All right, let's take a break. Come back. Clearly, I have not been doing this for a while. And talk about the prince who was promised, CJ.
Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesar's Palace, all this can be yours when you bet with Caesar's Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns reward credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using code OMAHAFULL, and then place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great, keep those winnings. But if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and older only, offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wagers only. Must register with an eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to the account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans.
Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org.
Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee,
Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay, C.J. Stroud versus older C.J. Stroud.
Woo, that's a take.
No.
I guess that works.
Joe Burrow looks so good. I was trying to, there's so many Joe Burrow stats that show the contrast in the last few weeks versus the previous ones. The one that I shared on X that I do think tells the story of Joe Burrow is that, again, using that 2.5 seconds or longer framework, the last few weeks, he's had a completion percentage over expected of 15.1%, which is insane. So basically, when he holds on to the football more than a quick game, he is the best quarterback in the NFL by a mile. Weeks 1 through 4, he was 33rd in that metric. So he's a different man, Greg. Anyone listening to this podcast knows that. They have watched him. It is very obvious. You do not need to be a football analyst to see that Joe Burrow is healthy again.
Right. I saw like the MVP odds recent, like this week. Ooh. And, you know, he might have been 3rd or 4th. And I was like, wow, that's really high considering what a bad first month he had. And then I thought about it. I was like, actually, that totally makes sense. The rest of the season is what matters. No, the MVP race to this point makes almost no difference. And are there any other quarterbacks you're like particularly backing to have a better next 8 or 9 games than Joe Burrow? I'm not. And part of it is he looks explosive. I thought it was maybe like an offseason storyline type of thing, but Paul Dana wrote about it at The Athletic that like his main goal this offseason was to get more explosive movements and move better. Maybe I'm just like hearing that and seeing it because of it, but he looks that way to me, that he's actually faster and a little more explosive when he does choose to run and when he does choose to evade rushers.
He looks as good running as he has ever looked. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I also, that MVP thing, boy, that Thursday night game has stakes, because you're absolutely right. Like, people will totally overlook the first few months if he finishes the first month, right? If he finishes strong, and his competition is in the division. And right now, I would say, is, you know, it's probably Mahomes, Hurts. I think Tua's still up there in odds, but no, I think the last Lamar, few weeks,
Lamar for sure.
Yeah, Lamar, and then yeah, Burrow.
I'd throw in Tyreek Hill and AJ Brown for now, but they won't end up happening.
Yeah, won't. Yeah, I think it'll come down to those. Get hot. Yeah, those four quarterbacks, and who, buddy? That's gonna be a great game. I think Jamar Chase might be questionable. You know, he took that pretty gnarly hit coming down. He made that crazy catch, right, in the last game. And I guess let me ask you this. Like, if, because so much of the offense has gone through him, although T. Higgins has started to heat up, would that, I mean, I don't think the Texans defense is super good. We can talk about them in a little bit. I just finished that game. But the Texans box. Do you think without Chase, like, are you worried, or do you feel like Burrow's just so hot right now and that he's got enough weapons that it won't matter?
I think it would give the Texans defense a fighting chance. I do think he tilts the field in a way that no one else does. But I feel better about them, obviously, after last week, but after last 2 weeks, but especially last week, the way that Burrow said, you know, he told Higgins before the game, like, I am going to keep going to you. Like, we need to get this guy going. And he's in a contract year. I think he's basically been open about it, that he's almost in his own head a little bit and not playing as well as he could, T. Higgins. And so I think that was a big game for him. And Mixon's been running the ball well. But I would say, yes, if you're missing Chase, that's a big enough deal that I give the Texans a much better chance, because it's not like even the last 2 weeks that, like, the offensive line issues, and that's why I was more concerned about the Bengals than I should have been, was that other things were going wrong other than Joe Burrow, and one of them was the line. It's not like they've really been fixed. It's just like Joe Burrow's just making up for it, either with quick decisions or buying time. Like, they're not, it, maybe they're average. Are they average? I don't even know if they're an average offensive line after all this, but he sort of makes up for it. So it's harder to do, I think, without Chase on the field, and that would be a big deal.
Yeah, he really is like the queen on the chessboard. Like, they've gotten so much better too at, I think, using him to dictate coverages, optimizing his matchups. Oh, by the way, I should give the official. He didn't practice today, so it's not. I'm not just like, ooh, there's a rumor. Like, he didn't practice.
No, and he said as much to start the week. Yeah. The tone of his voice was like very much, I'm not sure if I'm playing this week. So for him to say that made me think, okay, he really might not play.
Yeah, he was the one who said Joe Burrow should sit for a few weeks of the season. You remember that? I still think they'll be fine. But I do think it matters. I guess, you know, the Texans defense right now, like, they're still, the offense is way ahead of schedule. We'll get to that. The defense still feels like they're a few guys away. You know, obviously Stingley's been out for a while. Secondary, I think, has some pretty clear holes. There's been like surprises on the team. I was just asking our Texans reporter DJ Bieniemy if he was surprised how good the linebacker Cashman was playing, and he was saying that, you know, because he played with Saleh in New York, I didn't even know he was, frankly, before, yeah, when he was on the Jets, he had a lot of experience in the system and doesn't ask that much. He just kind of goes sideline to sideline and hits. I think he's looked pretty good. I think the pass rush looks good. Will Anderson may not have any sacks, but he looks really good to me. Grenard is good. But they still need, I feel like, maybe like one more player at every level. And, you know, they're pretty solid against the run, 26 in EPA per play versus the pass. I just think they're going to have, unless they completely dominated the Bengals offensive line, it's hard for me to imagine Cincinnati not moving the ball on them, especially even without Ja'Marr Chase.
I think that's right. Grenard has been really good, and Anderson's been good, and so they can get quick pressure. But the real weakness in the Bengals, maybe their whole offense, is Volson. Their guard is just gives up a ton of pressure. I don't know if like the Texans have that guy. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That there's like they're short at one position at every level. The linebacker, 202, like Joe Burrow is gonna pick on him. Shaq Griffin.
Yeah.
Is a bit of a weak point. Like, Joe Burrow is so good at picking out the mismatches, and that's what they decided to do late in that Bills game. Just like, let's spread him out and let Joe pick on who we want him to pick on. And there's still enough holes here, but they play with like a ton of energy. Bengals have had a couple big games in a row. Like, the Texans play with enough energy and have enough talent and are cohesive enough that I feel like they can have a good game in a certain week. And I don't feel like they're an overmatched defense. They're an average defense. They're just playing the hottest quarterback in the league.
Well, it's, you know, to contrast it with the Niners who lost Ryans, they do tackle pretty well. Like,
right. And they just, there's something about, you can see it with defense. And I actually remember when Lua and Arumo, like a couple years ago, pretty early on, like you could kind of see it with the Bengals, just how they fly around. I mean, it's such a basic thing to say, but the Texans play that way, which is you can always get somewhere if you play that way.
Hmm. So I guess my next question is, at what point did you accept CJ Stroud into your life as the savior of football?
I think it was early. That hasn't changed since you went away. Like, as early as...
He looked awesome in the preseason, so...
Right.
Not week one. He was, like, bad. Yeah.
Right. Like, as early as week three, just
yeah.
doing the next level things of, like, A, showing anticipation and, like, getting to a second and third read so quick. And the more I watch, I just think, like, man, that is, like, the key. That's the secret sauce. Like, how quickly can you get through everything? And it's funny to think about his pre-draft stuff and think about that, because he's getting to his second and third reads very quickly. And I know that system helps him do that, and that's great. And then he's just much more of the Georgia game
yes.
quarterback. You know, he's much more creative than people were worried about. Like, he makes second reaction plays all the time. And so if you can do both of those things, that's a top 10 quarterback.
Okay, so at the beginning of this podcast, I was talking about, like, what's been surprising since I left? So my final podcast was the end of September, and the last Texans game before then was when they obliterated the Jaguars. And I know this because the last clip I posted from my podcast was me and Dominique being like, yo, CJ Stroud, what? So he was awesome really early in the season. So this is not, you know, like, then he had, like, a couple hard games, you know, offensive line sucks and all that. But, So watching this in again, after, you know, after watching it real time, I was trying to think of, like, what I wanted, like what struck me the most. I mean, there's so much, right? You talked about the anticipation, the play under pressure, the poise, the accuracy. I mean, the touch on his balls. Like, he is so good at leading receivers to get yards after the catch, or leading them away from defenders to not get destroyed. It's really uncanny. I've seen about that watching the Jets, is like, guys were getting obliterated over the middle of the field. Like, because CJ Stroud throws a lot over the middle of the field. I think I saw a Next Gen stat. I think he leads the NFL in most stats on in-breaking routes. And he's so good at setting up his receivers. So that jumps out. I think the thing that I would describe it, when we talk about how he plays like a vet, it's like he has this really innate sense of risk and reward. Mm-hmm. Which is like he takes the exact right amount of risk, which is why he doesn't. I think he's got like one, like very few interceptions. But he's not a check down Charlie. He's just really good at assessing the exact, like, what needs to be done in this moment. And that's interesting because it's very different from, like, the, you know, the Mahomes and Allens of the world. Right. It is a little bit more like Joe Burrow, frankly. I mean, there's some similarities between these guys. They're not identical quarterbacks, but I mean, the offenses are very different. But, like, there's definitely, like, a common thread there that I think is pretty interesting. I also, like, people are like, wow, he's doing it without a run game. The run game absolutely sucks, and it didn't matter. Pierce was out this week. Singletary was in. It was a little bit better. It still sucks. Right. So he's doing all that run game. I do quibble with the notion, like, he's doing it with, like, terrible receivers. The receivers are good. I think they're good. Like, I know they're not, you know, I was obviously, like, seeing Mike Evans on the other side of the field. You're like, okay, that's what a superstar looks like. But I really think, like, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Noah Brown in this game, like, it's not, like, yes, he was throwing the ball in, like, perfect spots, but they were open, Greg.
Oh, man. I love Nico Collins. He has been one of my favorite players to watch in the entire NFL this year. And it just goes to show you what a system and a quarterback can do, you know, for a wide receiver. Maybe he wasn't ready to look like this before, but for a guy that tall, I actually have a hard time thinking of comps that are that good, like that good. Like, he's tall and skinny, he's 6'4", but he's so good after the catch. He's good at the catch point. Tank Dell on the other side is the opposite. He's representing, for all the short guys out there, like, I mean, he's 165 and he's playing on the outside and making contested catches. Like, they found two guys. The whole point of this Texan season is supposed to be, well, let's find guys we can build around. And they have it. And it's so valuable to have young receivers. I guess Collins will be entering the last year of his rookie deal next year, to me. But to me, he is a star. I actually think the ceiling is extremely high for him. And Dell, you've seen it. He can get open. He is so shifty, and he has such a good feel of zone defenses.
He's listed as 5'10". There's no way he's 5'10". No way, by the way. not possible. Yeah, I think he could have like a Brandon Cooks type career, you know? He was another one, by the way. I think that
5'8", 165 at the combine, by the way.
That's not accurate. Sound right. He's 5'8". So I think he was another one that Renner told me to watch. You know, you watch him, you're like, okay, maybe he's like a gadget guy, third round rich. He's obviously not at this point, but like, man, I think his ceiling is really high. That touchdown catch was impressive. His body control, his catch radius, like he's really a good player. And I love the combination of them together. It's like such a good pairing of skill sets. And I think that they'll have success. I mean, like the Bengals defense, they're always kind of hard to assess. Because they, you know, like get it up for the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And we all talk about how, like, you know, Lou Anarumo, oh, he does it again. But like, then whenever you look at the underlying metrics, they're like not good. I don't know. I think they're fine. I mean, I think that you can run on them, which Houston can't do. So that's, you know, not a matchup advantage.
Because you know that they want to. Bobby Slowick coming from San Francisco, who,
yeah,
by the way, he'll get a head coaching job at some point. I don't know if it's this year or whenever it is, but it's like if they keep cooking like this, it's gonna happen. So I'm surprised how bad the running game is, because I don't think Damian Pierce is like a bad runner. I don't watch him and say he's running poorly. It's just not working.
I don't know if it's, I mean, I think mostly it's the blocking, and obviously they've had some injuries on their offensive line and guys in and out, and maybe it's like a scheme thing, like Singletary, like, you know, he's a good zone running back. I don't know. The guys both take a ton of contact in the backfield. I'll just say that. So
they have the most negative runs in the league. And you're right. He's been doing, like, Stroud's been doing it without the run game. The O-line is healthy now. Like, it's as healthy as it did. And as it's been. I do think, though, it's interesting, like the Bengals defense just played, you know, pretty similar offense with the 49ers. Mm. And I think they're probably better than those. I know they're really good inside, just historically inside the 10-yard line, inside the 20-yard line, just making plays near the goal line. Like Wilson and Pratt are playing well. Hendrickson is having maybe his best year. So I do think it's a pretty tough matchup. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they have under 300 yards, because they had under 300 yards the two games before. It's a little easy to forget, but Stroud did have a couple of quiet weeks before last week's explosion.
Yeah, I think part of the reason with the Bengals that they're good against this type of defense too is, you talk about them with the Niners and the linebackers, they're really good in the intermediate area of the field, second lowest QBR in football. CJ Stroud is very good there, but I think you're right, they could have some issues this week. Yeah, I mean, Cam Taylor-Britt was awesome against the Bills, right? So they're pretty good at, like, playing, like, making you work for it, essentially. So, and then tightening up where it matters and then being opportunistic with the football. So that'll be interesting to see if they can turn him over, because, like, as we've been talking about, he just hasn't. But I don't know. I'm excited. I got the Bengals, but I'm excited.
I have the Bengals, too, because I do think this defense is getting better. They remind me, I said last year, they remind me a little of the Patriots, like old defenses, and that I think they're really built to change week to week. And those defenses, very often early in the season, were kind of like figuring out what they do well, what they are, and then would get better and better as the season goes along. And I think the Bengals defense is kind of heading there. They're pretty good at making a specific game plan for this week. So I'm a little worried about Stroud this week.
Okay. Lions, Chargers.
Why are you sighing?
I've been dreading talking about the Chargers, because the Chargers-Jets game, did you walk away from that with any impression of the Chargers? Like, did you have come out of that thinking anything about them?
Well, I have, increasingly, they've totally flipped in a month in that it's like, okay, the defense actually is coming along and they can stomp on bad opponents, which is a good sign.
Stop,
they weren't
the run,
even able to do that. But in the offense is slowly regressing, and not even slowly, it's like turning into a shell and it's collapsing on itself, and that worries me.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that versus Lions defense. Then we'll flip it and talk about the other side. Lions, you know how to buy. Chargers offense is 8th in pass DVOA. Justin Herbert is 5th in QBR. He's top 10 in a lot of metrics. 12th in air yards per attempt. Why does it look so meh? Like, what is it? How do you, like, what is it that strikes you watching them? Even hearing that they've, I mean, obviously, they're coming off a game where he didn't do anything. And I think it was pretty obvious why he was just under, I mean, he was pressured on like 50% of dropbacks, probably, right? He couldn't do anything, couldn't move the ball. So, setting that aside, the Jets are awesome. Well, you know, a lot of quarterbacks have looked, what did Robert Saleh say? We've embarrassed the best quarterbacks or whatever. Setting the Jets game aside, like, what do you think watching this offense?
Well, because the run game is like bad. Again. Like the worst, maybe. I think they have the lowest success rate since week one. If you take the week one game away, which they ran well and everyone was all excited because that was the offseason storyline, Kellen Moore in the run game. So they're bad. I thought their offensive line had a chance to be great. They're actually the youngest offensive line in the league in terms of age, weight, and snaps. And since they lost Corey Linsley, which was a while ago now, they just haven't been the same. They're not bad, but they're average at best. They're like average, and I thought they needed to be more. And so you take away Mike Williams, who's the most explosive receiver. Then you take away Josh Palmer, who's the next most. And it's just like we're back to where we were with Lombardi, and it's just a station-to-station passing game and no running game. That's why it looks so bad. Those numbers, they must be inflated from September because they had great numbers in September. And I bet over the last month, I mean, I can't imagine they're that good.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I was looking back at his Herbert's games and just kind of thinking about him. Like, you know, they played the Bears, who are bad. Actually, the Bears defense is not that bad. But, you know, it was like very like, okay, let's just be like super. I mean, Herbert, I think, had like, he completed like an insane amount of, so it was very efficient, but not particularly sexy, right? And then this game, again, like, they didn't do anything, but they were just woefully overmatched. He had I'm trying to remember when he got his finger hurt. I don't know if that factors into any of this, by the way. So I guess there's that as well. But it was, what was the night game where he just like looked kind of, it was like probably his worst. Oh, the Chiefs game.
Cowboys.
Yeah. Chiefs. Oh, yeah. Sorry. The Cowboys game was a night game. And that was one of his worst games in a while, frankly. And then they lost to the Chiefs as well. The last game I remember thinking that's like Herbert was the Vikings game where he just shredded them. Remember, they just kept blitzing him and he was like, all right, he's just killing them. So I think it's like, I would not say he's been playing poorly, but I think it's what you just said, which is they're not running it. There's not, it's interesting. Like, it's not like he's totally dinking and dunking, but like I used to do this, segment on SportsCenter called Kimes Dimes, where I would choose the 5 best throws of the week. And it was always hard for me to not pick like 4 Justin Herbert throws because it was just so many sick throws. Do you feel like there's been like many?
No.
Yeah.
Well, and that Minnesota game was the last time Mike Williams played, and he had like 120 yards in that game.
Right.
And it shouldn't, and it was when, was it the last time Corey Linsley played? I really think that's been a big deal for them too.
You're probably right.
But there's, you're right. The sizzle, the like exciting throws have not been there for whatever reason.
I posted something during the Jets game about how annoyed I was watching Quentin Johnston instead of Zay Flowers, who went after Quentin Johnston. I don't think well, it was just because it was like a play action dropback. Herbert had time. He was leaning downfield and Quentin Johnston just was not open. And he doesn't try. Why would he trust throwing him? He tried throwing him that ball in the first drive. And of course he didn't compete for it. I don't want to sound like I'm totally crapping on a rookie, but like, it does feel like, man, that was looking at Flowers and Addison.
Yeah, I love Addison. It's like, oh no, we've already got a guy that gets open in Keenan Allen. We don't need two guys that get open.
No, you need someone with speed and separation ability. And like, I don't know. I had a lot of questions about Johnson, whatever. And then, of course, it was like, oh, you're making an excuse for Herbert. No, I'm just saying that this is a bad draft pick. So I guess, you know, so the Lions defense has been pretty solid this year, right? Aside from, like, Seattle getting boat raced by the Ravens, they've been mostly quite good, actually, which is their top 10 in most metrics, very good against the pass. They have had some pretty significant injuries. But I think, like, the pass rush is good. Hutchinson's good. McNeil is good. Linebacker is playing well. I just, like, on that side of the ball, I feel like, I don't know, like, where's the explosives going to come from? I don't know.
Right. I think,
prove me wrong.
It's crazy how things can change fast, because I just feel like the Chargers defense has to keep this game.
Yes, totally.
At like 23 or under, or else the Chargers offense just can't catch up. And you mentioned Johnston, like, the way to attack this Lions team is absolutely, like, deep in on the outside. I think mm-hmm. like they're not strong at cornerback right now. I was a little surprised they didn't make a move. And I don't think their pass rush isn't bad, but it's not great. Like, I think you could set up those plays. Like, this would be a vertical Justin Herbert making wow throws type of matchup where they need it. I don't know if they can pull it off, but I feel like that's their best route to scoring.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it is weird to feel that way about the Chargers after, especially at the beginning of the season. I do think they figured things out. And okay, Chargers fans, I'm going to say something positive. Yes, it's the Jets offense. They suck, whatever. But man, when Mac, Bosa, and Thule rush the passer, it is very cool. Like, that is a, like, so I, Tom Telesco, you deserve a lot of side-eyeing for the first round pick, but you nailed it with Tuipulotu, because he is, I love watching him play. He has so much juice, and then when he's on the inside, it's like, oh God. And I think that could cause problems against the Lions. I mean, you saw, like, as good as this Lions offense has been, Goff's turnover luck or whatever, his turnover potential has regressed to where we know it to be. And, you know, he is a much worse quarterback when he's pressured. So I think it really starts up front. The Lions offensive line, I think, will be getting a little bit healthier since the bye. And obviously they're an incredible unit. But yeah, I think that's a really good group. I do think, however, that the Lions will probably just say F it and run on them. And even though the run defense has looked improved, the Lions rushing attack is a pretty different animal.
Yeah, it's weird to look at the Chargers, like, run yards allowed over the last 5 weeks, and it's like among the best in the league. Like, not wow, bad. these are the Chargers. It's surprising. David Montgomery returns, and then the offensive line is fully intact for the first time since week one. Yes. So they're expecting Ragnow and Jackson to be back, and they've had people going in and out the whole time other than Sewell. And so that's really good for them, and to have Montgomery back and have that 1-2 punch, that's huge for them. And then when they throw, I think they'll pick on Eric Kendricks a little bit, maybe over the middle.
Oh, 100% they will. Yes.
And it's, you know, they've kind of settled on Jasir Taylor as their slot guy. And okay, that's going to be a lot of Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I feel like we haven't gotten, like, full Derwin James this year, because he's playing so far back, because they kind of need him there with their cornerback situation. But he hasn't had a great year. So it feels like a pat. You know, I don't know. I feel like there are more mismatches on that side, but it's up to our guy, Brandon Staley. You know, it's two third-year coaches. Like, it's last chance saloon, I feel like, for his defense to be a difference maker, and they are playing better, so I'm trying to be optimistic.
It's no coincidence that Staley shaved his podcast beard and beat Robert Saleh, who had grown a podcast beard, and, well, he saw the results. This last game against the Jets, again, Jets offense, I know, was the first time where I was watching Derwin James and, like, kind of pumping my fist a little bit, and then him and Gilman, who was, like, freaking just hitting, like, I was like, okay, yeah, because it hasn't really felt, his impact hasn't really been there this season. And I think it, in this game in particular, where for the Lions, using the middle of the field is so important to their offense, it does feel like a game where, like, Derwin James has to, like, make a game-changing hit or force a fumble or blitz or whatever. The Lions run game is really interesting, because it's not one of those situations where like Gibbs came in and he looked amazing and you're like, yeah, they were stashing him behind this old timer who sucks. No, like David Montgomery's been really good too. So now they have like two really good running backs, and I'll be curious to see how they deploy them. I think against the Chargers, you talked about going after Kendricks. I think you want it. This would be the game where you throw it to Gibbs. I think you'd like to see him integrated too in the passing game a bit. I would like to see both of the backs on the field. I think they have a lot of levers that they can pull against this Chargers defense, which is why I'm picking the Lions in this one. I'm sure they're favored.
Yeah, I'm taking the Lions, but I don't know. The Chargers always play well when you least expect it. I mean, man, I just keep falling for it though. I mean, at the last second, I picked them to make the Super Bowl this year, so I'm a complete idiot. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really do think like these two programs, like they both started at the same time, these two coaches, and you know, one is clearly ahead of the other. And I think if Staley's defense, I have some optimism actually that it can play quite well down the stretch, then that can save him. Joey Bosa has been playing through an injury the first 5 weeks of the season. It was just not himself, and it kind of killed them because in the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's back to being Joey Bosa, and that makes a huge difference.
All right. The Chargers were, the Lions, pardon me, are favored by 3 in LA. So that feels right. Okay. As always, we will go through my family's pick pool, and you're going to help me make my picks. Bad news. Since I last recorded in late September, I have fallen behind to third place in the picks pool. Clearly not doing this podcast and making the picks with the help of my friends has punished me, as has the rise of Sunmin Kimes, who is absolutely demolishing the family right now. So I got a lot of ground to make up. So that also means I have to make some, you know, spicy picks here and there. So I can't just play it safe. Are you ready to help me?
I am. We're taking her down.
Chicago, Carolina. It's at Chicago. The Bears are favored by 3.5, which is pretty interesting considering they're starting Tyson Bagent. Carolina is missing Brian Burns and DJ Chark. Disgusting game.
Well, we're going to enjoy it. You know, we can talk about team building and the draft picks. And I mean, the Bears have been the better team. You know, it's funny how their offensive stats this year are actually pretty good, except for they just turn the ball over like every possession, which is pretty important. But, you know, like yards and points per drive, it's like they're better than average. They actually, you know, Tyson Bagent, I think, has earned himself about at least 6 years in the NFL.
Oh, and
if he has one more good start, it's like 8 as a backup.
All right, I'll take the Bears. Ugh.
I'm taking the Bears.
Colts at Patriots. The Colts are favored by 1.5. I keep taking the Patriots and saying to myself, this is going to be a weird Bill Belichick game, and I keep getting punished for it, and I'm not going to do it again. I'm done.
No, fading the Patriots all season is one reason why my picks have been good. I'm quitting. Maybe I'm just a bitter fan, but this team is so bad.
Got that number 5 draft pick, Greg. Right now.
Let's get it to number 2. Then we're talking. Let's go.
Okay. The Packers at the Steelers. Two teams that my worst pre-draft take. Well, actually, no. The Steelers have a winning record. I was right. They're amazing. The Packers got a little bit of life with Aaron Jones last week. I feel like that comes to a stop here. I'm gonna go with the Steelers. I just think that Jordan Love against that defense doesn't bode well.
Yeah, I swear I have spicier picks usually. I had that Minnesota upset last week, but this feels like a chalk week. My mild take is that I can see signs of progress from Pickett in the offense, that like they could creep towards average, and that's all they need. So I actually think they're gonna get better, even though they're 5.
I concur. Canada, sideline Canada. That I was thinking about that when who did you say at the beginning was moving to, was it Wilkes?
Steve Wilkes, yeah.
Someone like maybe Sam Hoppin, if you're listening, you're always good at this. Someone should do a study of the coordinators when they move to the field, how they perform before and after. Mm. Now, it would take a little bit of work. You'd have to go through the headlines, but Canada, sideline Canada, you know? Turn things around.
I can't watch this Packers offense against. They just create new ways to make me frustrated.
Okay, the New Orleans Saints travel to Josh Dobbs land. They're favored by 2.5. That feels right, unfortunately. Although I would love nothing more than the Vikings are they America's team? I feel like it's not just Dobbs, but I also just like the defense is so chaotic and skiing over their tips or out kicking their coverage or whatever. Stupid. And like they're just so much better than they have any right to be because of the, there's some guys who have played well, and then I think that the scheme is very fun.
But yeah, they like rush six like every play. They're great, and you're right, they are the team of America. They're the team of the Around the NFL podcast. We announced this week the Vikings. We waited until week 10, and yet I'm picking the Saints in this game. I feel like there's a come down here. They're injured. The Saints are quietly like the healthiest team in the entire NFL. Like all their starters are all available, and they're coming together.
Okay, we picked the Bengals over the Texans. They're favored by 6.5 at home. We picked the Ravens over the Browns. They're favored by 6 at home. Tampa, Tennessee in Tampa. This is a close one. Tampa's favored by 1. I think Will Levis has looked really good. However, Greg, watching Texans Bucks, I was really impressed by the Bucks. Even though they got, 37 points scored on them, whatever. I thought Baker played really well. I said this to you, but like the one thing I was really like that kind of stuck out to me is like the Bucks offensive line is quietly returned to being good. And I thought Kalijah Kansey looked really good rushing the passer. Do I want to pick against Will Levis? Yes, I do. I'm taking Tampa.
I'm leaning Bucks all week because I feel like this is one of those 50-50 games that for whatever reason the consensus will be on Titans because everyone watched Levis play well and the Bucks have lost 4 in a row. The Bucks aren't bad, but I did notice that Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis are out of practice and they really both might miss this game. So that would affect my pick, but I'm leaning Bucks. I mean, they're missing both cornerbacks. That's a pretty big deal.
That's not good. All right. That's a monitor the injuries. We picked the Niners against the Jags. It's in Jags. Niners are favored by 3. We got Detroit over LA. It's in LA. Detroit's favored by 3. Atlanta at Arizona. Atlanta's favored by 1.5 at Arizona. So this is going to be the one. I'm pick Kyler here. Kyler's back.
Whoa.
Why not? I got to pick one upset.
But that's how your mom wins, you know? You just feel like you got to pick one, and you pick the Cardinals.
I'm so intrigued.
Although the Falcons are worse than their 4-5 record. They're a tough – I think you're just – it's a vengeance pick against Arthur Smith's press conferences.
I hate them, and I love them. They're performance art. It's like the most elaborate Nathan For You bit. did you see he gave a new answer today about the lack of Bijan touches in the goal line? And I don't know.
What was it?
It was nothing. It's really, you watch it. Literally says nothing. It's insane. okay, I'm going to take Arizona. I don't care. F it. Seattle, Washington at Seattle. Seattle's favored by 6. I will take a Seattle rebound, although I do like what I've been seeing from Sam Howell, but I think the Washington defense is the kind that Geno can perform well against.
This is a week where it's nice they traded their edge rushers because I think edge rushers against the Seahawks can win. That's a lot of points for the Seahawks, the way they've been playing offense, but I hope we're wrong.
We're going straight up here, so. Okay, oh God. The Giants travel to Dallas. Dallas's favorite. Guess the line.
It's Tommy DeVito. It's 16.5.
Yeah, it's 16.5, yeah. Sadly. Tommy DeVito. Think we'll see Cooper Rush. Think we'll see Trey Lance. I don't know. He won't be active. They should activate.
They're going to get one of these quarterbacks. It annoys me already that the Giants are going to stumble into one of these quarterbacks. I really... Don't you think they're the most likely? Them
you mean
and the Bears?
Caleb Williams, or you mean when you say one of these
or Drake May, that they're going to get one of those two quarterbacks. They'll have a very expensive backup in Daniel Jones that they have to trade.
Crazy. Will a team trade for him?
If they paid like half the money, yeah.
Okay, here's the most.
That's an off-season topic.
I think the most disgusting pick of the week, because the Bears is the most disgusting. This one's the one where it's just like, oh my God. Sunday Night Football. For some reason, the NFL, in all of its wisdom, thought, "Nah, we got Browns, Ravens, we got the Jags and the Niners, we got this young stud, CJ Stroud against Joe Burrow. Let's make America watch Jets, Raiders." Greg, you work for the Shield. Explain the decision.
I don't know. New York, Vegas, who's a big national team? I don't know. It's so annoying. I mean, if you love that, although I guess I can't say talk both sides of my mouth. Josh Dobbs versus the Broncos is next week, Sunday Night Football. I was shocked they didn't flex out of that.
What are they doing? Did the flex guy just like quit? Is it one man?
There's been so much Jets and Raiders in primetime. It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
What is happening? I don't understand.
Just because everyone's going to be on the Raiders, I think
I'm going to go.
I'm taking the Jets. The defense is the best thing in this game.
Yes, AOC against. Has AOC taken off? Are people calling him that? I am.
It's taken.
Okay, and then finally, Monday night. Oh, man, we got some stinkers. The Broncos at the Bills. I would take the Broncos to cover, but I'm going to take the Bills to win.
Agree. I think the Broncos are better. They have a chance to be better. If there's one team that has just been a blah team that you told me would like is actually going to find their way to a winning record, they run the ball well. The defense has been much better the last 3 weeks. Like it could get dark here. If we got Josh Allen needing a game winning drive, I could absolutely see that. Sean Payton's had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. I don't know.
I just think the Bills defense, like the teams have just, it's everyone is so clearly just drawing a circle over the linebacker position and, you know, like Dane Jackson last week. Like it's just, I don't know if the Broncos can take advantage of that personally, but we'll see. We shall see. All right, Greg. I should have said this at the beginning. So the podcast is back. We're audio only for now because, well, I look insane every day. No, there are other reasons. Well, that's partially because I'm very narcissistic. I did put on real pants. You can't see them, but this is a big deal. They're soft, but they have a button. Going to be big news on the video front coming soon, but you're going to have to stay tuned for that. But we are going back to 2 times a week starting next week. Dominique Foxworth will be back to talk about that Monday night thriller and other things. And then, we'll be back to our usual schedule. So everybody, thank you so much for hanging in there, I guess. For those who didn't subscribe or unsubscribe, I really hope not many people did that. I guess I'll find out. Have you ever taken a break from your podcast? I feel like you guys have been at it for so long.
No, we're afraid. We're narcissists. We won't even go away for like 1 week, but it is beautiful to have you back, Nina.
Well, that's scary. No, thank you for joining. And you guys, check out the Around the NFL podcast where I, despite Greg's warnings, will be joining to talk about that incredible Thursday night game. So you can catch me there too. All right, Greg. Thanks so much, buddy.
See ya.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.